Well, good morning and welcome. My name is Mike Copps from the FCC. I am just delighted to be out here with this enthusiastic audience, and I understand there's a lot of enthusiasm outside the building, too, and I am really happy to see that. So thank you all for coming to take part in this event. At the outset, permit me to extend a very special thank you to the University of Washington School of Law and Sharon Nelson and to everyone at the Shidler Center for Law, Commerce, and Technology for helping make this event happen today. You know, this is something of an unusual event, as some of you may know, in which we were not permitted to draw on the resources of the full commission or our media bureau for assistance in all of the logistics in putting a meeting like this together. And there are a lot of logistics, many of them very challenging. So we appreciate all the help that we got. I hope you will bear with us if it's not as smooth running as it might have been if we'd been able to have everybody supporting it, but that's just not the way that it was. I want to thank, I guess I would just say that, you know, if I had to choose between doing a hearing on a shoestring and having no hearing at all, I'll take the hearing on the shoestring every time. So we appreciate your bearing with us. I'm most grateful to my colleague, Jonathan Adelstein, Commissioner Adelstein, for being here with us this morning. I want to thank him. We invited our other colleagues, too, and my hope is that they will take advantage of subsequent field hearings that Commissioner Adelstein and I are going to do, working up toward the vote, which will take place later this spring. I want to also... Pardon? Okay. And I want to thank also the members of our FCC staff, Jordan Goldstein, my senior legal advisor, who is standing over here, and Sarah Weitzel from Commissioner Adelstein's staff for all the help they gave. You know, no issue pending before the Federal Communications Commission matches in importance the decisions that we're going to make this spring on whether to eliminate or significantly loosen our media concentration protections. And I say that because what we decide is going to have a formative impact upon our media for many years to come, for each one of you in this audience and for your children, too. And I believe that fundamental values and virtues of our democratic system are at stake, things like localism and diversity and competition and maintaining the multiplicity of voices and choices that undergird our democracy. Now, those things may sound like abstractions, but they're not abstractions. They translate very directly into the kinds of entertainment that we're going to be watching and hearing for years to come, and they translate into the whole nature of the democratic dialogue that we have. So if they're abstractions, they're kind of curious abstractions because we can hear them and we can feel them and we can see them, and we're going to be living with their consequences. I think we should have two goals here this morning. First of all, I'm proceeding on the assumption, a little bit different than some people at the commission apparently have, that all wisdom does not reside inside the Beltway in Washington, D.C. So there's a need for us to get out and build our record because it just needs a lot more depth and breadth than even the fabled capital city can provide it. So that's our first goal in coming to Seattle, is to talk with members of this community and the Pacific Northwest region to tap into local expertise and to help us make the right decision going forward. And secondly, I hope we can raise awareness in Seattle and throughout the Northwest that something important is going on at the FCC, something that each person here has a stake in, something that every citizen should know about. In Washington, they talk a lot about developing data that will satisfy a court of law, and some even say that that's the only court that matters. I believe we also have an obligation to the court of American public opinion, and the best way to begin getting that public opinion is to get out and do hearings like this. I am frankly concerned, as many of you know, about consolidation in the media industry, and particularly concerned that we are on the verge of dramatically altering our concentration protections without the kind of studied debate, without the kind of analysis, without the kind of dialogue that these issues so clearly merit. I don't come here saying we have all the answers. I have all the answers. I don't think we've even asked or begun to ask all of the questions yet that need to be asked. And it really comes down to this bottom line. Suppose, just for the sake of conjecture, that the commission votes this spring, whenever Chairman Powell decides that he wants to call these rules up, suppose we vote without adequate data, without adequate debate, we vote to eliminate or significantly loosen some of these caps. And suppose, just for the sake of argument, that it turns out to be a mistake. And then my question is, how do you put that genie back in the bottle? And I think the answer is pretty simple. The genie's out of the bottle, and you don't put it back. So that's why we need this kind of national dialogue and debate, and that's what I'm determined that we're going to have. So today I'm happy to see Seattle is making its voice heard. I'm enormously pleased to be here to listen and to learn. We have received a lot of comment already at the commission, and that's great, but sitting in our offices in Washington and waiting for people to email us does not constitute the kind of responsibility I think we have as a commission to get out and tell the people what we're considering doing and to solicit their input and their analysis. You know, the Pew Research Center reported just last week that nearly three-quarters of our citizens, this is an amazing fact, nearly three-quarters of our citizens have yet to hear anything about this debate. And that ought to concern us all. It ought to frighten us all. And that's partly the commission's fault, because we haven't gone out and done the kind of outreach that we need to. And I think we have a public interest duty to do that. And it's also the public interest responsibility of the media to cover these issues. And the sad truth is that important and powerful segments of the media have just about totally ignored this issue. I don't think I have seen yet a network story about it. Something tells me this hearing is not going to disappoint us, and we'll walk away from here in a few hours knowing a lot of things that we didn't know when we walked in, and we can take those back to the other Washington and the other side of the continent. We have some extraordinary people here today. I'm very grateful for all of them coming, and I hope we'll be able to look back on this meeting when it's through as having made an important contribution in getting our attention and my colleagues' attention for these issues. With that, let me stop and recognize my friend and colleague, Commissioner Adelstein, for some opening remarks.
Thank you, Commissioner Copps. I'd like to thank you also for calling us all to get out of Washington, the other Washington, and to take this on the road so we can hear from folks outside the Beltway, especially people here in this region. This is the farthest afield we've come yet, and it's about time. These issues are so important to everyone in the country that we can't afford to not go out and talk to people about what this means to them, what they think it means to them, and what they think we ought to do, and also to get experts' opinion that are experts who don't normally hear from, as Commissioner Copps indicated. Now, I'd like to thank you also, Commissioner Copps, for all the hard work you did and all the staff work you and Jordan Goldstein did in putting together today's panels. It's a lot of work, and he's right, we kind of had to do it on our own, and I thank them for that. We appreciate all that Sharon Nelson and UW have done to put this together. And most of all, I thank all of you for participating and joining us here this morning, because that's really what it's all about. We had two recent hearings on this. We attended in New York and Richmond, and those really demonstrated to me the value of hearing from folks in different parts of the country. The panelists and the public participants sparked a lively debate, and I'm really glad to continue that debate here in the Pacific Northwest. I was also glad to see that the Seattle City Council acted on a resolution regarding media ownership. Whatever we think of, you know, what the content of that resolution was, and, you know, we don't have an opinion on these matters, I think what's important is that they sent us a message that the Pacific Northwest is paying attention to this issue, and that they care about this, and they're going to be engaged in this debate, and that you're not going to sit on the sidelines. These hearings are a great way for me, as the newest commissioner at the FCC, to grapple with these issues. And from what I heard at the last couple of hearings, they're a great way for the public to learn what's at stake as well. One school teacher at our last conference, at our last hearing, told us that she'd come to the event and she never heard about these issues. She was one of those 75% that Commissioner Copps referred to. But by the end of it, she'd sat through the whole thing. The school was out that day because of the weather in Richmond. So she decided just to show up. And by the end of the day, she said, well, you've heard from all sides on this issues, and it gave you a lot that you can use to make a reasoned decision. But she also told us that if we weren't sure that we'd heard enough, well, we better go out and listen some more. And I don't think we have heard enough. I don't think that we've done everything we can to learn about this. I think we have a lot more to learn, and that's why I'm glad to be here today. As Commissioner Copps is, thank you. Commissioner Copps has underscored how important this media ownership debate is, and the FCC decisions that we're about to make are the most important that we've perhaps ever made in the history of the Commission, because they affect the media market, which isn't like other consumer markets. It dictates the, not just like the price you'll pay for some consumer good like candy or breakfast cereal, like other antitrust matters, but really it's the vitality of what the Supreme Court referred to as, quote, the uninhibited marketplace of ideas, unquote. The diverse range of media voices that are the very core of our democracy. It's about what you see, what you hear, and what you read, and about what goes on in your community, and what goes on in your country, and what goes on in the world. I'd like to read a bit for a moment from that seminal First Amendment decision that talked about our role. In that case, the Supreme Court held, and I quote, "It is the right of the public to receive suitable access to social, political, aesthetic, moral, and other ideas and experiences, which is crucial here. That right may not be constitutionally abridged either by Congress or by the FCC," end quote. So this is the Supreme Court of the United States telling us that we cannot abridge the people's right to hear a multiplicity of voices. Now that's every bit as relevant to our discussion of the ownership rules as the D.C. Circuit Court opinions that have asked the Commission to justify those rules. So while we have to work to build a solid record, and a solid evidentiary record to support our rules, we have to bear in mind that the Supreme Court mandate makes us make decisions that best promote the core public interest goals that have always animated the Federal Communications Commission. And those goals are historically and what we believe today are important: diversity in the media, localism, and competition. I don't think that these decisions can rest entirely on empirical evidence. This isn't a science. You know, to be sure, we've got to examine quantitative data, and we've got to look at the studies, and we've got to get as much facts as we can. And I commend Chairman Powell's leadership in trying to conduct some studies at the FCC to get to the bottom of that. And those studies, and there have been a lot of critiques of those studies as well, offered by interested parties and the public, are a key part of the current record. But these questions don't lend themselves to purely quantitative answers. We also need to hear about your experiences as participants in the media marketplace. We also need to hear about, the government rulemaking involves predictive judgments. We've got to make a prediction about what's going to happen in the future. And again, that is not a scientific endeavor. Traditional antitrust analysis also looks at what will happen if two companies merge. What will be the effect on the market? What will be the effect on prices that consumers have to pay? You can try to make a reasoned judgment. You can try to use science, but ultimately there's judgment that comes in. And those predictive judgments have to be rooted in the evidentiary record, but they don't lend themselves to mathematical proofs. Well, the bottom line here is that we can't allow the structure of the industries that distribute ideas and creative products to limit the voices that can be heard in this country and in each of our communities, including right here in Seattle. So we got to decide how we're going to structure these ownership rules and what rules would best promote these core public interest values I talked about of competition, localism, and diversity. Our task is a daunting one, and it's made even more daunting by the very short time frame that we have been given to make these decisions. I don't know yet what rules will best serve the public interest. I don't think that anybody does. But I do know that the FCC must proceed with caution as we reconsider our existing rules. One need only look at the experience in the radio industry to look at how quickly a change in the rules can affect the face of an industry. So you've been listening to the radio, it sounds like, and you're not happy with what you hear. You know, Congress in 96 took the cap off of how many radio stations one company can own, and it had a huge impact. And we're getting a homogenization of what we hear on the radio, according to the studies that we see. And do we want that to happen in every other segment of our media, in television, in cable? No. So, exactly. You know, consolidation can be a good thing in some circumstances. You know, radio says that economies of scale can lead to services that wouldn't otherwise be possible or keep a radio station on that would otherwise go off. But I also think that consolidation carries huge risks, and these risks go beyond traditional competition issues or traditional antitrust analysis. One risk is the loss of localism. That is, the degree to which news and information is relevant to and programming is appropriate for a particular community. Programming that serves the unique needs of local communities by definition varies from community to community. Consolidation, on the other hand, as is the case in radio, can lead to homogenization of programming, and programming done from a national place and not from local places where it belongs. Another risk is the loss of a diverse array of voices and viewpoints over the airwaves. I think that diverse viewpoints fuel the debate in public and make sure we hear all the different angles, and they strengthen our democracy. So I see today's forum as another step in our record-building efforts, and I see today's panelists as a cross-section of some of the many stakeholders in this proceeding. Your journalists, content producers, broadcasters, educators, but even more importantly, your listeners, viewers, and participants in our democracy. You all have a stake in this proceeding, and I really want to hear your views. It's been noted that we have over 15,000 comments. Some people say this is great. We have 15,000 comments. This is a huge number by FCC standards. But there's 250 million people in this country, and every single one of them is affected by this. So today's part of the effort, and we need to make a heck of a lot more of them, to get out, reach out to people, and get input on these decisions. So your participation in this is critical. The process depends on it, but more importantly, the outcome depends on it. There's just no way that we at the FCC can fully understand the impact our decisions will have on different constituencies and different communities unless we hear from them. So if we're going to craft the ownership rules that best serve the public interest, we've got to hear from the public. And that's why I'm here. And I thank you for joining us, and let's get to it.
Thank you, Jonathan. Let me turn now to my friend Sharon Nelson, the director of the Scheidler Center at the University of Washington. We actually have had kind of a similar career path, having both worked in the United States Senate on these issues some years ago. She went on to be a distinguished chairperson of the Public Utilities Commission here in Washington. I want to thank her again for all of the work she put into making this event come to pass, and your capable staff with Paul Beard, especially for all the help that they have rendered.
Thank you so much, Commissioner Copps. We want to thank you for being here. You have provided a tremendous educational opportunity for our students. As you noted, it's extremely rare for an administrative agency to have field hearings, and our students are obviously energized by your presence here. I have not had so many calls about an event at the Scheidler Center since I've been there. So thank you very much for being here. Is this working better? Okay. I want to be very brief and thank you again for coming here. I hope you'll do it again. Next year, the law school will be located back on campus in our newly constructed Gates Hall, and we will have a beautiful moot court room named after our former Senators Magnuson and Jackson. And as you know, Commissioner Kopp, Senator Magnuson considered himself one of the fathers of the public broadcasting system, seeing way back decades ago that alternatives to commercial media were necessary for the democracy that we live in. And I also want to thank you for having the courage to have a hearing outside of Washington. This has been denigrated as an old-fashioned way to take information. I think the term whistle stop was used. But state regulators do this all the time, and I just want to briefly share with you how valuable state regulators find listening to regular consumers and ordinary citizens on issues of this importance. Years ago, the telephone companies were rolling out a new technology that we now know as caller ID. And we here in Washington State noticed that about 40% of our citizens on this side of the mountains paid extra fees to not disclose their phone number. And we said, what are we going to do with this new technology that automatically discloses people's phone numbers? And the phone company said, well, the technology is too rigid. It's too rigid to, I'm thinking maybe they're having their revenge now. It's too rigid to have any consideration for people's privacy interests in their phone numbers. Well, we conducted a series of hearings around the state, and again, Commissioner Edelstein, it was a Spokane area school teacher who disclosed how she used her phone at night to call the parents of students who had been disruptive during the day. And she really didn't want her home phone to be disclosed to those students should their parents have caller ID. And she said to us, you don't want to make people afraid of the technology. You could see the lights go off in the U.S. West executive's eyes when she said that. Our commission evolved a policy that there would be blocking of the phone number at the customer's choice. And that became our rule, and it became the standard for the industry. Lo and behold, the technology was not so rigid that privacy interest and that public policy could be adopted. So I tell you that story about why these kinds of hearings are so important. Today, the proponents for the repeal of these rules enumerate all the number of outlets that exist for people to get news and information. But as you noted, Commissioner Copps, Washington, D.C. tends to be a rather supply-side town. And here you're going to hear from the demand side. You're going to be hearing from readers, listeners, and viewers. We had Gene Kimmelman from Consumers Union in the law school yesterday lecturing about, despite all those impressive numbers about the numbers of outlets, in fact, in local communities, consumers of news and information, citizens, have very limited choices in their access to these various media. And as you well know, embedded in our First Amendment values of freedom of speech, press, and religion is the underlying theory of the founders, that there be checks and balances, that there be a freedom to speak and hear for all, not just a tight oligopoly, and that the people have a right to hear from diverse and antagonistic sources of news and information. This is terribly important for our democracy. So I just want to, again, thank you, wish you good luck, and good luck to you and your colleagues in these deliberations. So much more than market values are at stake, and we wish you all the best wisdom. Thank you for being here.
Thank you. Next, I'd like to introduce Councilmember Jim Compton from the Seattle City Council. He has been a newsman for many years with the Compton Report, with the McNeil Lear NewsHour, NBC News. He's also taken a great interest in these issues and on the City Council. I'm very grateful for him coming out today.
Thank you, and let me say that I have to pinch myself to think that, and John Sandifer, who's an old reporter that I worked with for many years, will understand this, to think that a guy who started out at the AFTRA minimum, that's the American Federation of Television Radio Artists, I started out at the AFTRA minimum as a radio reporter in Portland, Oregon at $93 a week. It was a very long time ago. To think that I would ever share the stage with the learned the commissioners of the FCC is pretty astonishing to me. Let me just say that. I've got to leave in a little while, but it's important to tell you why. I have to have a meeting about the Burke-Gilman Trail. And to the people from out of town, the Burke-Gilman is an astonishing bicycle trail that links several communities, and I think it's almost 30 miles long now. And we're finally finding a way to complete the missing link of the Burke-Gilman Trail. I despair to ever see any penetrating analysis of the debate about the Burke-Gilman Trail in local broadcast media. Now, that may come up in some form in public radio, but the local media are not serving this community in the way that their broadcast licenses should require them to. And let me be very clear about what I'm trying to get across, which is I don't want to simply come from a position of nostalgia that says there was a great day in broadcasting when there were highly principled broadcasters who were devoted to their community and that it was different. Well, that did happen, but it's gone, and we've got to understand what happened and try to say, and I think Commissioner Kopp shows great courage and wisdom in saying, what are the consequences of further concentration power in the media going to be? You won't reverse it. You'll never put the genie back in the bottle. I just need to say, from my point of view, what I thought a broadcast license once meant. I believe that the airwaves belong to the people of the United States.
Amen.
All right. The notion of federal regulation of the airwaves was obviously to control the traffic over the airwaves, but to parcel them out in ways that, and this was Warren Magnuson's mantra on this, by the way, so that the users of the airwaves, if they were to profit greatly, would be required to have some obligation to the communities in which they work and serve. And that's what's changed. We saw a time when there was a thing called ascertainment, in which stations were required to go out and they, by God, had to do it. The FCC made them go out and say, what's going on in your community? And they had to keep a public file. I think they probably still have them. But it's no longer a meaningful exercise. They had to say, these are the issues in our community. And if it was water pollution, or if it was race, or if it was traffic, they had to show that they had ascertained what was going on and that they had a program to step up to those issues. And it ain't there anymore, folks. Let me tell you, that's what I think has happened. The media concentration means that today there is not much to be proud of in the federally licensed stations in our community. There's some stuff, and the ownership, which is largely out-of-town ownership, can point to it and say, gee, we're trying hard. But let me say that my perception, and I should probably back up and tell you that I was in this industry for 32 years, as starting out as a radio reporter, but I, among other things, I've been a newspaper editor of a small newspaper. I've been an NBC News correspondent in the Middle East and Africa. I've been a bureau chief. I've been an NBC Washington correspondent. And I worked for King TV in this community for many years, and I'm very proud of my time there. The change of ownership of media outlets has meant that out-of-town owners currently, in my words, back a pickup truck up to the loading dock at their local stations and put money in and take it out of this community. That's what really troubles me the most. And I'm sorry that I have to say that, but that is money that should stay in this community in the form of the things that a license would require a person to provide. That is public affairs, helping people produce public affairs spots, programs, meaningful programs about local issues. We're not going to go back to that great old day that Sandifer and I experienced. Sturgis Torrance is a former manager who's in the audience, and he was a great person to work for. And we had the luxury of working for profitable stations that had owners who had roots in the community. And somebody once said to me, one of the reasons that we've got responsible ownership is that they have to go to the Rotary and they have to go to the Junior League and defend the things that go on at their station. And that doesn't happen in the new parallel universe that we live in. So let me just say we can't go back, but I fervently hope that the commissioners will understand that further concentration does not serve the use of the airwaves in the public interest, and that's where I come from. And I hope, I pray, that I'll someday see something on the Burke-Hillman Trail on a local station.
Thank you, sir, and thank you for your leadership. I'm going to ask the first panel to start making its way up here. And while they're doing that, I wanted to read a letter that Senator Maria Cantwell sent out here with me and asked that I read to this group. And by the way, copies of this letter and everybody who supplied a written statement are available up here on the stage. Thank you for sharing this statement, writes Senator Cantwell, with the Washington constituents I am so proud to represent. Although I am in Washington, D.C. while the Senate is in session, please know that this event, this issue, is important to me and is a matter I am overseeing closely as the FCC decides what I believe will dictate nothing less than the future of American media. Lest I sound overdramatic, I believe this is very much a decision-making that addresses more than economic questions. It is one that touches the very founding principles of this country. Ownership of the many different American media and control of the information they communicate involves some of our most core American values: freedom of speech, open and diverse viewpoints, vibrant economic competition, localism, diversity, and maintaining the multiplicity of voices and choices that undergird our precious marketplace of ideas. I want to begin this hearing with an important observation that I strive to share daily with my colleagues in the Senate. Not all of the expertise and sound decision-making skills are centered in Washington. Much of it is to be found in the real Washington. I'm glad that the Commission has decided to seek out some of this local wisdom today. The voices, experience, and knowledge that should inform any decision-making on media ownership rules are right here in Washington State, in localities across the U.S., and the FCC can most ably make decisions when it hears these voices. Why? Because right here is where the voices of the media are, where the individuals that participate in American media are. I also want to thank you who have come to speak today for engaging yourself with the political process, for sharing your voices on this important issue, for getting involved. It is my hope that the expansive open record that will develop from this and other hearings around the U.S. will greatly influence the decision facing the FCC. Since its inception, the charter of the FCC has been to ensure that the public resource of America's public broadcast media voice, no less than its lands and parks and physical resources, are managed for the benefit of all the public and in a way that preserves and fosters the public interest. 7 years ago, the prior Congress directed the FCC to try an experiment. The FCC lifted limits on national radio ownership and significantly reduced overlapping ownership restrictions in the local markets. I believe it is very important that we take a close look at the outcome of that experiment before we or the FCC embark on any further experiments. It may well be that the radio industry is a canary in the coal mine of media consolidation, an important first indicator of the problems that America will face if the FCC or this Congress attempts a deregulation at all costs approach to addressing issues of media ownership. Whether or not this is truly the case and what we can do about it, if it is something I hope we can learn more about today. So we thank Senator Cantwell for that comment. Okay, so let's go to the panels. This hearing, by the way, is being taped, and it will be entered into the record of the FCC. I also learned a short while ago that it is being webcast this morning, so that's good news.